Current docket, and we'll move on to the Dillon case, and I see council's already situated. Good to see you, Mr. Dean and Mr. Chandeville. Good to see you both. I'm sure you've already signed in. Very good. We're ready to hear argument, and of course, you know that you receive 15 minutes each. And do you desire to reserve any rebuttal time, sir?
Judge, I do. I desire to reserve 5 minutes, please.
Very good. Whenever you're ready, thank you.
May it please the court. The issue in this case is whether the Roanoke County Circuit Court was the proper venue for a crime that occurred within the jurisdiction of the city of Salem. The facts of this case are both unusual and have tragic consequences for the appellant. The facts are basically these. Ms. Dillon was the tenant of an individual who owned a home that was located within the county of Roanoke. And the owner of that home was incarcerated in early 2015 on a rather heinous crime. And the Commonwealth's allegation at trial and what the jury ultimately found was that while he was incarcerated, she undertook a scheme to forge both a power of attorney and a deed of gift, and then record that deed of gift at the Roanoke County Circuit Court Clerk's Office, which is located here in the city of Salem, Virginia. And in doing that, committed several different offenses, including forgery and larceny and uttering of the deed itself. The appellant in this case was a mother of four, had not been in trouble before, elected to go forward with the jury trial, and of course, in doing so, once they pronounced her guilty on each of the charges, was also sentenced by the jury, which is one of the unique features of criminal jurisprudence here in the Commonwealth. And that when she was sentenced on each of the charges, this mother of four, who had never been in trouble before, received a sentence from the county of the jury sitting here in the county of Roanoke of 39 years. I was not trial counsel in that case, but I did get involved at sentencing, and a sentencing hearing was heard before this in this court, in fact, in this courtroom, before Judge Charles Dorsey. The jury sentence was reduced to 30 years, but she's now serving a 30-year active sentence with the Department of Corrections and the penitentiary, and this appeal followed. The issue before the court today was preserved at trial by trial counsel, who moved to strike the uttering charge before it went forward to the jury at the close of the Commonwealth evidence. And it arose in kind of interesting circumstances. The clerk of the Roanoke County Circuit Court took the stand as a witness for the Commonwealth of Virginia. The assistant Commonwealth attorney asked the clerk bare-bone questions to establish foundation for the uttering charge. You work in the clerk's office, yes. You know Ms. Dillon, yes. In fact, you recognize her from having come into your office and recorded a deed on such and such date, yes. And of course, the clerk's office is located here in the county of Roanoke. That's what the Commonwealth attorney asked at trial. And he said, no, it's located here in the city of Salem. And Judge Dorsey interjected sua sponte and said, yes, it's located here in the city of Salem. That's what's on the record. Defense counsel objected at that time and on that basis moved to strike the uttering charge for improper venue, and then renewed that objection, and actually there was a pretty lengthy hearing about it at the halftime of the trial case before it went forward.
And let me ask you about that. The code section at issue here is really 17-126.2, which originally gave concurrent jurisdiction and then was modified in 1988 when the jurisdiction provision with regard to Roanoke and Salem was quote unquote not set out. Is it your position that that is the equivalent of repeal?
Well, it's an interesting question, and that really gets to the heart of this case. Appellant believes there are actually two code sections that are at issue here. Of course, there's the general venue provision, which is 19.2-250, and that basically says, and it's a fundamental principle of criminal jurisprudence, the trial of any, or the proper venue of any charge shall lie within the jurisdiction of the situs where the crime was committed. And in this case, we would submit that the crime was committed actually here in the city of Salem and not within the county of Roanoke. This Roanoke County Courthouse is actually in the city of Salem. It's very unique about this part of Virginia.
Counsel, let me interject and just follow up on a question that Judge O'Brien asked. In reference to Title 17, which was ultimately repealed, the way statutes work is obviously you've got the statutes and you've got the acts of assembly. What significance would you attach if the acts of assembly in reference to whether jurisdiction would be concurrent between Salem and Roanoke, if in fact that was never specifically repealed, because it can be specifically repealed?
Well, what we would argue is that the specific venue provision, which was operative in the prior case, the Garza case, which we cited in the 1980s when this issue first came up between Salem and Roanoke County, that statute, that specific venue provision, and there's others for Alexandria and other locations in Virginia, was operative before 1998. And then there's this 1998 Acts of Assembly, and Council for the Commonwealth of Virginia has briefed the court on it, and we filed a reply brief. What we would argue is that that statute conferring concurrent jurisdiction is no longer operative, and that in fact it was repealed when it was not reenacted in 1998.
But there are actually two ways that it occurs. Is that not correct under Title 10 and Title 11 in reference to either the repeal of the title and also the acts of the assembly? If this portion of the act of the assembly was not repealed, does that have any import or impact on your argument?
I think it does, but I think, again, that 1998 acts of assembly, what it did was, in reviewing it, is that the General Assembly repealed the entirety of Title 17, and in fact, that's what is reflected in the actual act itself. It says that that the entirety of the act was being repealed, and that's in Clause 10, or Section 10 of that 1998 Acts of Assembly. It says that Title 14.1, not applicable here, but then also Title 7, and it says Title 7, Sections 17-1 through 17-38, which would encompass this concurrent jurisdictions statute that was operative prior to that, of the Code of Virginia, are repealed.
How about the second repeal clause, though?
Well, the second repeal clause, it's interesting, because the General Assembly, unfortunately, in this case, maybe was not as artful in drafting this particular piece of legislation, which I think has their artfulness or lack thereof has bearing on this case for reasons we'll get to in a moment. But the second repeal clause, what we would argue, and that's Clause 6, and that says that the repeal of 17-1 through 17-124 and 17-127.21 through 17-238, the concurrent jurisdiction statute falls within the gap. And so it's not specifically repealed under Section 6, even though it is repealed under the general repeal under Section 10. And what we would argue is that Section 6 should be read as essentially just an ex post facto section. It doesn't mean that certain code sections in Title 17 were repealed or not repealed. Instead, what Clause 6 says is that it just simply says that for a specific subset of code sections which were being repealed and then reenacted, that it would not have any operative effect on offenses that were committed prior to or were otherwise pending on the date that the act itself was passed and signed by the governor of Virginia. And so what we would suggest is that more limited repeal section is subsumed by the general repeal section in Clause 10.
So why have it at all then?
Well, I think it's because the General Assembly, and we're getting now into the intent of the act itself, and we would argue that the intent here is not necessarily operative. We can rely on the plain language of the act itself under the rule of lenity. But I think what the intent of the legislature was...
Counsel, let me just interject in reference to the rule of lenity. That really applies to criminal statutes. This is technically a venue, so it's not an actual offense. So do you want to explain how the rule of lenity applies?
Sure. What we argue is that even though this is a code section in Title 17 and then the general venue, which is 19.2, we would still suggest that the rule of lenity should still apply and consider that this venue provision as applied to a criminal prosecution constitutes a penal statute within the meaning of the rule of lenity. And I think it gets to kind of the heart of our argument versus the argument that the Commonwealth of Virginia is making, which is that in trying to determine what the proper venue of the crime itself should have been in the year of 2016 when this case was tried, that code section giving essentially concurrent jurisdiction, even accepting the Commonwealth's argument, wasn't set out. It wasn't in my code book. It wasn't in the judge's code book. It was not referenced at trial. This idea that there was a code section that was not set out, but it was just floating out there and hiding within the law of Virginia, was certainly not something that the court was aware of, the trial court was aware of, or that could have been relied upon by the Commonwealth of Virginia at the trial stage. And what we would suggest is that under the rule of lenity, it is a principle, fundamental notion of criminal justice that individuals, when they come before this court and are punished criminally and subjected to potentially a multi-decade sentence, as this woman was, that they ought to have fair notice of what the proper jurisdiction and venue is of the criminal court, what the potential punishments might be, and certainly what the elements of the crime are that the Commonwealth has to prove. And this idea that there's some shadow statute that's hiding within the annals of the Code of Virginia that's not listed anywhere, but apparently Ms. Dillon is supposed to be able to find it, because that's what the rule of lenity says, that individuals of common meaning, without the education of looking into the Acts of Assembly, etc., should know what the applicable laws and statutes are of the Commonwealth of Virginia, that the rule of lenity in this case requires, in fact compels, a result that finds that even if this code section survived the repeal in 1998, and we suggest it didn't, that even if it did survive the repeal in 1998, that the rule of lenity otherwise compels a result that favors the accused as opposed to the Commonwealth of Virginia in this case, and that gives, frankly, Ms. Dowling the benefit of the doubt in terms of whether there was concurrent jurisdiction. With that, I reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
No, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Christian Handel for the Commonwealth. The only real issue in this case is that it's a very narrow issue, and the facts as to that issue are actually undisputed. The narrow issue that this court has to decide is whether or not the General Assembly's general repeal of Title 17 in 1998 also repealed code sections that were no longer included in Title 17 in 1998. The Commonwealth thinks the clear and easy answer to that question, based on the legislative history, based on the text of the statute itself, based on the Code Commission's involvement, is that that general repeal did not serve to repeal specific code provisions, prior code provisions that were no longer in Title 17 at the time of the repeal. The facts that are at issue are really undisputed as to that point. Ms. Dillon was tried for an offense that occurred on Roanoke County property located within the city limits of Salem. So under the Supreme Court's decision in Garza, and I apologize, that may have been this court's decision in Garza, but under the Garza decision, if Garza was still good law, and if that prior venue provision, 17, which had been set out as 17.1-126.2, if that was still good law at the time that Ms. Dillon was tried, then her venue was proper in Roanoke County.
Counsel, let me interrupt you. Garza obviously takes into consideration the statutory scheme prior to the repeal, though, of Title 17. Is that correct?
Correct, it does.
So what impact would that have on your argument? In terms of how Garza would be instructive?
Garza is instructive if 17.1-126.2 remained good law after Garza. I think the analysis beyond that doesn't have any real impact because the Garza court relied on that code provision. And so the question becomes, once the Code Commission in 1988 decided to stop setting out that particular venue provision and other venue provisions, the Code Commission, of course, is important to remember, has no authority to repeal statutes. The General Assembly has authorized the code provision, has authorized the Code Commission to codify certain statutes that have general import across the Commonwealth. Prior to 1988, the Code Commission had thought that those venue provisions were worth codifying. In 1988, the Code Commission changed its mind and decided, because it's somewhat of a narrow provision, that the venue provision at issue here and others like it were no longer going to be included in the code books. But of course, the General Assembly did not act to repeal those code provisions. The Code Commission just decided not to put them in the books. And so then in 1998, 10 years later, when the General Assembly, on the Code Commission's recommendation, moves to revise Title 17 by creating a new Title 17.1, the general repeal language, that's at Clause 10 of that Act of the Assembly, purports to repeal Title 17, but it does not purport to repeal specific code provisions within Clause 10. However, that's where Clause 11 becomes instructive. And I'd like to point the court, if I could, to pages 34, 35 through 36 of my brief, because for the court's convenience, I've included that Act of the Assembly, the 1998 Act of Assembly, that it's relevant here as an addendum to my brief.
I assume your position would be that there would be no point to having Section 11 or Title 11 if there didn't need to be a separate set out for repealing Acts of Assembly.
Correct, Your Honor. So if in Clause 10, the General Assembly repealed Title 17, and then Clause 11, the General Assembly repealed two very specific code provisions, Title 17-117.1 and Title 17-118.1, that's at page 36 of my brief. And there, as Your Honor just noted, there would have been no reason to do that had the Clause 10, the general repeal, also included and encompassed a repeal of all the code provisions that were not currently set out in Title 17. So to read those clauses together and to read them in the way that my opponent has suggested would make Clause 11 completely redundant. And of course, this court cannot and should not read anything the legislature does to be completely redundant if there is a way that they can be read consistently. And the Commonwealth's position is that they can. The general repeal did not serve to repeal specific code sections that had previously been set out but were no longer in Title 17 at the time of that repeal. I'd like to make a couple of additional points from the text of the Act of the Assembly 1998 and also from the legislative history that further bolster that point. I think that those points by themselves are sufficient for this court to decide this case. Clause 6, though, provides further support for that position. In Clause 6, the General Assembly essentially restates what they were going to then do in Clause 10. But instead of stating that as a repeal of all of Title 17, they become a bit more precise. They state that repeal as a repeal of Section 17-1 through 17-124 and 17-127.21 through 17-238. And of course, what's missing, what falls in the gap, are the code provisions that had previously been set out in Title 17, but were no longer set out in that title at the time of this act, which includes the venue provision that's at issue here. So we would submit that restatement of the repeal is just a more precise statement, and that's consistent with the other clauses as we discussed. It's consistent with the General Assembly did Clause 11 as well. To read it in any other way, as my opponent has suggested, that somehow, for some reason, the General Assembly wanted to make sure that there was no ex post facto effect of the vast majority of these reconfigurations, basically, and this reenactment, but they wanted the code provisions that fell in the gap to have ex post facto effect, I would submit it would really be an absurd result. I don't know why the General Assembly would want the venue provisions to have an ex post facto effect so that a prosecution that was occurring in Roanoke County at the time that this legislation was considered to have been passed would then have to somehow be dismissed for improper venue because this act, which became effective in October of 98, had ex post facto effect to prosecutions that were already underway at the time of the provision was enacted. So I think that would lead to an absurd result and counsels against the reading of the Act of the Assembly that my opponent has suggested here today. I think also, as I've submitted on brief, the Code Commission in April of this year decided that it perhaps is best that we set out these venue provisions in the code. And so they did that. And this specific code provision, which had previously been 17.1.26.2, is now set out in the Code of Virginia. It's in Title 17.1. They've included it at Section 515.2. So it's now in the Code of Virginia. And of course, again, the Code Commission can't make something law that was not previously good law. And we know that there was no Act of the Assembly in between their decision not to set it out and then to later set out. So the Code Commission made that decision based on their conclusion as to the fact that this had been good law since the time it was passed, very long before this case and before Garza was decided, and continues to be good law today. So that's why it has now been recodified, and perhaps the confusion that it may have caused in this case will not occur again in future cases. But for purposes of this case, it's clear that Act of the Assembly, which created that code provision, which gave concurrent jurisdiction, has been good law since before Garza was decided. It's continued to be good law throughout this case, and it is still good law today. And I'll close with just one note on the rule of lenity. The court was correct that is a rule that applies to penal statutes. This court's decision in the Kirby case, it's a published opinion, decided in 2014, which is at 63 Virginia App 665. There's a footnote in that opinion, footnote 6, That case was a venue case, and there was some argument as to the effects of the venue provisions at issue there dealing with jurisdiction between Chesterfield County and the City of Richmond. And the court dropped a footnote six, and said the rule of lenity, of course, only applies to penal statutes, and these venue provisions are not penal statutes, and therefore that rule has no application in this case. The same would apply here in interpreting the venue provision at issue. It would certainly apply, I think my opponent intends to take it even further than the defendant there, and arguing that it should somehow apply to this this repeal statute. The repeal statute certainly is far from being a penal statute, and thus the rule of lenity would have no application. If it did, it's hard to even conclude which reading would be more in favor of defendants. Of course, in this particular case, it would be to his benefit, or to the defendant's benefit, to read it the way that she suggested. But in another case tried in Salem instead of Roanoke County, it might be to the defendant's benefit to read it the other way. So for that reason, the rule of lenity really has no application here. Unless there are any further questions from the court, I'm happy to rest on that brief and ask the court to affirm.
We have no more questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I want to briefly respond to a few points that were raised by the appellee. First, with respect to the 1998 acts of assembly that are at issue in this case, there are really three operative sections in that act. There's Clause 6, there's Clause 10, and that there's Clause 11. And what we would suggest is that Clause 6 is an ex post facto section. It doesn't necessarily reflect which sections from the Title 17 were being repealed and which were being reenacted, but merely reflects which of those subsections or those subsets of the title actually had an ex post facto effect on pending criminal prosecutions that were then pending in 1998. With respect to the interplay between Clause 10 and Clause 11, I agree with counsel for appellee that really there is confusion in this case. And it's puzzling, and I'm not certainly arrogant enough to suggest that the Code Commission decided to convene in April of this year while this petition and an appeal were being heard by this court to clear up that confusion. But I think, again, that in this case, if we're looking at what the Commonwealth's burden would have been in this case, which the Pollard case says the Commonwealth carries the burden to prove venue, and they have to do that at the trial stage, and that if we were to give the appellant in this case the benefit of the doubt in terms of what are admittedly confusing or somewhat contradictory clauses within an act of assembly in 1998, that it should be Ms. Dillon, not the Commonwealth of Virginia, that gets the benefit of the doubt. We would suggest that the footnote in Kirby is not controlling about whether the rule of lenity applies in this case and whether a venue provision is not necessarily a penal statute. What we would submit is that in a case like this, the jury that Ms. Dillon was constitutionally guaranteed to receive should have been drawn from citizens of the city of Salem and not citizens of the county of Roanoke with respect to the uttering charge. In terms of the action that we're asking this court to take, as this court has done in other venue cases before, again, venue is not necessarily material to the guilt or innocence of my client, but it is something that the Commonwealth carries the burden on. And so what we would ask the court to do is to remand this case back to the county of Roanoke for a new trial on those charges over which the Roanoke County Circuit Court can exercise proper venue, and leave it to the Commonwealth of Virginia whether to prosecute her on a new trial in the city of Salem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Are there any additional questions? Very good. Thank you. We will come down and greet counsel.